So Jeremiah chapter 10, and reading the first part of that chapter. Hear what the Lord says to you, O house of Israel. This is what the Lord says. Do not learn the ways of the nations, or be terrified by signs in the sky, though the nations are terrified by them. For the customs of the peoples are worthless. They cut a tree out of the forest, and a craftsman shapes it with a chisel. They adorn it with silver and gold. They fasten it with hammer and nails, so that it will not totter. Like a scarecrow in a melon patch, their idols cannot speak. They must be carried, because they cannot walk. Do not fear them. They can do no harm, nor can they do any good. No one is like you, O Lord. You are great, and your name is mighty in power. Who should not revere you, O King of the nations? This is your due. Among all the wise men of the nations and in all their kingdoms, there is no one like you. They are all senseless and foolish. They are taught by worthless wooden idols. Hammered silver is brought from Tarshish and gold from Uphaz. What the craftsman and goldsmith have made is then dressed in purple and blue, all made by skilled workers. But the Lord is the true God. He is the living God, the eternal King. When he is angry, the earth trembles. The nations cannot endure his wrath. Tell them this: these gods who did not make the heavens and the earth will perish from the earth and from under the heavens. But God made the earth by his power. He founded the world by his wisdom and stretched out the heavens by his understanding. When he thunders, the waters in the heavens roar. He makes clouds rise from the ends of the earth. He sends lightning with the rain. He brings out the wind from his storehouses. Everyone is senseless and without knowledge. Every goldsmith is shamed by his idols. His images are a fraud. They have no breath in them. They are worthless, the objects of mockery. When their judgment comes, they will perish. He who is the portion of Jacob is not like these, for he is the maker of all things, including Israel, the tribe of his inheritance. The Lord Almighty is his name. You may have heard this next story before. I can't remember whether I've used it as an illustration here before. But there was a child who was drawing a picture. And his mum asked him, "What are you drawing?" The answer that came back was a surprise. He said, "I'm drawing God." And his mother said, but no one knows what God looks like." And the child replied, "They will when I've finished." But is it up to us to decide what God is like? Is it up to us to decide what he looks like? What he's like as a person, what his character is, what his nature is? Fortunately, no, it's not up to us to decide. But God has revealed himself. He's revealed himself in his interactions with people. He's revealed himself through his creation, through nature. He's revealed himself in his spoken words, his written words. He's revealed himself in his Son, Jesus Christ. And many of these things, of course, are recorded for us in the Bible, which I take and we as a church take to be God's words, not just human words trying to describe what God is like, but God's words revealing for us what he is like, God speaking through human authors, so that we know what he's like. We don't have to grope and feel for what God is like, because God reveals himself through the words of the Bible. We're going to follow a short series on what God is like. You've seen that, presumably, from the top of the notes. What God is like. The nature and character of God. Looking this morning at the living God. And we'll follow that on with the infinite God, the holy God, and the loving God. So this morning, we think about the idea of God being a living God. This, of course, is in contrast, according to Jeremiah, to the dead idols. In verse 5, which was our second mention of melons in the service this morning, like a scarecrow in a melon patch, their idols cannot speak. They must be carried because they cannot walk. Do not fear them, they can do no harm, nor can they do any good. They cannot speak. They must be carried. They can't do any harm. They can do no good. Idols are dead. They're worthless. Now, this isn't about the fact that spiritual forces can be behind idols, and worshipping an idol can allow the power of a spirit to do something. But the idol itself is dead. It can't do anything. It can't speak to you. It can't listen to you. It can't hurt you. It can't answer your prayers and do good. But then in verse 10, Jeremiah says of the Lord, "The Lord is the true God. He is the living God, the eternal King." Jeremiah is talking about a true God rather than all these false gods, the idols that many people worshipped. He's a living God, not a dead God. So if he's living, he's active, he's able to do stuff. And he's eternal, not temporary. He lasts forever. He lasts before us and he'll last after us. If you'd like to, then turn to Exodus 3, as we're just going to think about this story for a moment. It's quite a well-known story in Exodus 3 of when God calls Moses to be the leader of his people. And Moses is out in the desert, and God speaks to him from a bush that looks as if it's burning, but it's not burning up. But how does God speak of himself in this passage? Because what God uses to reveal himself speaks to the fact that he is a living God. We look in verse 14 of Exodus chapter 3. God said to Moses, "I am who I am." This is what you are to say to the Israelites. "I am has sent me to you. He's revealing himself just with the verb of being. The bit in the next verse makes it a little bit more hidden. In verse 15, God also said to Moses, "Say to the Israelites, 'The Lord, the God of your fathers, the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, and the God of Jacob, has sent me to you. This is my name forever, the name by which I am to be remembered from generation to generation.'" It's hidden in our English translations because of convention. "The Lord" is actually what is generally printed instead of the Hebrew for the verb to be. The Hebrews, the Jewish people, believed it was too holy to say the name of God. So instead of saying the verb there, they put in the word Lord instead, Adonai. And so English translations of the Bible have carried that on, where this name of God from the word to be is used. Many English translations will put Lord in capital letters instead. But underneath that is this name that's based on the Hebrew word to be. It's not quite the I am that is in verse 14, it's more he is. So when God says it of himself, he says, "I am." But when he says to Abraham, tell them, he is. I've not said the name yet. It's difficult to know exactly how to say it. It's sometimes called the four letters, or if you want a technical word, the tetragrammaton. Now, if you want to impress your friends, so we learned about the tetragrammaton in church on Sunday morning. Four letters. They didn't have vowels as letters in Hebrew. So just the consonants. It's thought probably to be Yahweh is the likely pronunciation of these four letters, the way they would vocalize them. And so some of our modern worship songs use Yahweh. Now you may also have heard of Jehovah as the name of God. And this is linked as well. But what they did with Jehovah was they took the consonants from Yahweh, but they took the vowels from the Hebrew for Lord, which is Adonai. And so you mix those together and you make the Y a bit harder into a J, you get Jehovah. So the two are the same name really, Yahweh and Jehovah. And it comes from this Hebrew word to be, or he is. So I am, God says to Moses, tell them he is, Yahweh, Jehovah. You see, it's all about being. It's all about life and existence. And it says that this is his divine name. In the Bible, names are much more than just a label to identify someone. But names reveal something of character. And so it's not just, oh, that's handy, we can call him Yahweh and we know which God we're talking about. But the name Yahweh has a meaning through the character that it reveals, as well as being something to distinguish the Lord God. So the name that he gives is a name of being, of existence, of living. We also find out a bit more if we look into John's Gospel, chapter 5 and verse 26. Jesus says, as the Father has life in himself, so he has granted the Son to have life in himself. Being the living God, God is self-existent. He's not dependent on something outside to make him living. He's living in himself. And he has the power to give life to others, as we see in Acts 17, verse 24. The God who made the world and everything in it is the Lord of heaven and earth. He does not live in temples built by hands. He is not served by human hands as if he needed anything, because he himself gives all men life and breath and everything else. God gives life and breath to all living things. Sometimes we hear an exhortation, we may have it as a bookmark or as a plaque on the wall saying something like, God has no hands but your hands. God has no feet but your feet. It's not true. Even if you take the you as being plural, God has no hands but your hands, plural you. It's not true. And Paul says it here in Acts. He's not served by human hands as if he needed anything, because God himself gives all men life and breath and everything else. God does not need us to serve him. God does not need us to tell other people about Jesus. You didn't expect me to say this, did you? God does not need us to. But God has chosen to use us, and he's chosen to limit what he does to our love and obedience, our acts of love and obedience and therefore he does need us. You get the distinction, hold those two things in tension. Ultimately, he does not need any of us because he himself is God. He exists of himself. But he has limited himself to work through us as we respond to him in love and obedience. If something's not done in the world, it is humankind's fault, not God's fault, because he's limited himself to work through our obedience. And he calls all of humankind to obedience, which comes through trusting in him, a knowledge of his love, responding in obedience. But don't be arrogant and think God can't do anything without you doing it. That's the wrong kind of attitude. God can do something. Of course, he can raise someone else to do something if you're obstinate in not doing it. But ultimately, he can do anything he wants to himself by his own power. Though many times he'll choose not to because he wants us to do it. So God is the living God. He has life in himself. He's self-existent. He's not reliant on anyone else because he is the living God. Let's just work out a few more things that him being living God means for us. First thing is that because he's a living God, he can be a personal God. John chapter 4, 24 says, God is spirit. And the word for spirit is the same as the word for wind or breath. And sometimes when you ask people what God is like, one of the things they come back with is that he's some kind of impersonal force, a powerful impersonal force. And maybe that idea of God being spirit, wind, breath, can kind of, you can understand why people might interpret that as an invisible force. But it must always be held in tension with the fact that God is personal. He's living. He's not just a force, but he's a living person as well. He's not bound by a material body like we are. That's what him being spirit means. But it doesn't make him a force only. And throughout the Bible, we see men and women in a relationship with a living God. Again, we saw the contrast between God and the idols in Jeremiah. You can't have a relationship with a wooden idol, but you can have a relationship with a living God who listens and who speaks. So because he's a living God, he can be a personal God who wants a relationship with all the people in the world. He wants a relationship with you and a relationship with me. Because he's a living God, he's able to act. And he's able to act powerfully, as Alistair reminded us, which in a little way is a bit of a foretaste for infinite God as well, but just a part of what infinite God is all about, that he's powerful. Let's look at Isaiah 46, 6 and 7. Again, Isaiah as well as Jeremiah is contrasting idols against God. Some pour out gold from their bags and weigh out silver on the scales. They hire a goldsmith to make it into a god, and they bow down and worship it. They lift it to their shoulders and carry it. They set it up in its place, and there it stands. From that spot it cannot move. Though one cries out to it, it does not answer. It cannot save him from his troubles. Idols are not able to act. The inference, as Isaiah says that, is that the God he's writing about is able to do what the idols cannot, to answer and to save. You can see this again with Daniel. Daniel chapter 5, verse 23. Daniel's talking to the king Belshazzar. Instead, you've set yourself up against the Lord of heaven. You had the goblets from his temple brought to you, and you and your nobles, your wives and your concubines drank wine from them. You praised the gods of silver and gold, of bronze, iron, wood and stone, which cannot see or hear or understand. But you did not honour the God who holds in his hand your life and all your ways. They cannot see or hear or understand the idols, but God, the living God, holds our lives in his hands. He's able to hear our prayers. He's able to answer our prayers. The living God is personal. The living God is able to act. And the living God is also faithful. Because God is self-existent. He exists in himself. He's not created. He has life in himself. He's therefore not affected by outside things. Now again, we need to hold that statement in tension, because he allows himself to be affected by outside things. But fundamentally, because of his being, he's not affected by outside things. Therefore, he's unchanging. Nothing can change him. Although he may change what he does according in response to what we've done. A theologian back from the 1600s said, God is always like himself. God is always like himself. We cannot change God. Because God is always himself, if he makes a promise, he's going to keep it. He's faithful to the things he said he would do. Malachi 3, verse 6, I, the Lord, do not change. Hebrews 13, verse 8, of Jesus Christ, God the Son. Jesus is the same yesterday, today, and forever. Numbers 23:19, God is not a man that he should lie, nor a son of man that he should change his mind. Does he speak and not act? Does he promise and not fulfill? Because he's the living God, he has life in himself, he doesn't change, and therefore we can trust that God will be faithful to his promises, to what he's revealed. He's faithful in his relationship with mankind through Jesus Christ. Because he is a faithful God, we can sing, Great is thy faithfulness, O God, my Father. There is no shadow of turning with thee. Thou changest not, thy compassions they fail not. As thou hast been, thou forever will be. God is the living God. Personal, able to act, faithful. And very briefly back to Jeremiah chapter 10. What should our response to the living God be? Verse 6 and 7. No one is like you, O Lord. You are great and your name is mighty in power. Who should not revere you, O King of the nations? This is your due. Who should not revere you? Do we revere the living God? We stand in awe, as that song before the sermon reminded us. We stand in awe of this great and wonderful God who created all things. We just bow our heads in prayer.